Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Before we begin, a brief listener warning. This episode includes discussions of spiritual abuse, mishandled sexual misconduct allegations, and failures in institutional leadership. Some of the material may be difficult for survivors or those who have experienced trauma within a faith setting. Please take care while listening. In the first four chapters of the series, we explore the rise and fall of two of the most visible power centers in the modern vineyard movement, Duluth Vineyard in Minnesota and the church formerly known as Anaheim Vineyard in Southern California. We began by looking at how church metrics and co-leadership structures contributed to empire building and paved the way for systemic failure. We follow the story of the Gatlins in Duluth, how Michael and Brenda rose through the ranks, how their son Jackson was shielded from accountability, and how Vineyard USA repeatedly ignored or delayed action even after credible allegations surfaced. In the last episode, we turned our focus to the Scots, Alan and Catherine, whose leadership in Coleraine, Northern Ireland, raised major red flags long before their controversial takeover of Anaheim Vineyard. And throughout all of this, one question kept coming up. Why did Vineyard USA consistently fail to act? In today's chapter, we look at the question of accountability, on paper and in practice. We'll explore the investigations that were launched in response to the scandals in Duluth and beyond. We'll break down the reports, their findings, and the recommendations they made. And we'll ask the question, what happens when a church movement commissions investigations, not to bring justice, but to control the narrative? After the fallout from Duluth, Coleraine, and Anaheim, the Vineyard movement both in the U.S. and the U.K. needed to signal that it was taking abuse and misconduct seriously. So they did what many modern institutions do. They hired investigators. Three different third-party firms were brought in. Grace, Godly Response to Abuse in the Christian Environment, was hired by Duluth Vineyard. Trusted HR was brought in to examine Causeway Coast Vineyard in Northern Ireland. And Guidepost Solutions was commissioned by Vineyard USA to perform a broader institutional assessment. But here's the thing most people don't understand. Not all third-party firms are created equal. These organizations exist along a spectrum. On one end are victim-centric advocacy organizations like Grace. When you hire them, you hand over control. You don't get to steer the process. You don't approve the language. And you don't get to downplay the findings. And that's the point. On the other end are traditional law firms, whose job is to protect the institution. Their investigations tend to be confidential. Their scope is tightly defined. And their reports, if they're even released at all, are reviewed internally first for liability. Guidepost Solutions sit somewhere in the middle. They're more reputable than a defensive law firm, but still contractually aligned with the organization that hires them. The client gets to define the scope, the client sets the terms, and the client has influence over what gets published and what doesn't. Which brings us back to a question I raised in Chapter 1. Why did Vineyard Columbus quietly part ways with Grace and then hire Guidepost instead? Around the same time Vineyard hired Guidepost, they also launched a podcast series called Leadership Under Pressure. part of their We Are Vineyard platform. The series covered spiritual abuse, narcissism in leadership, and power under stress. But one episode from October 2024 stands out. In it, National Director Jay Pathick explained how the guidepost assessment came about. Quote, "One of the funniest moments with them was saying, well, you're doing this because people have made complaints, right? It's like, no, no one has made complaints. We want to get ahead of it. Because a lot of the stuff they do is they have to investigate things because there have been massive complaints. So anyway, they did this massive report for us. Here's our recommendations. We've been working through and implementing those recommendations. But one of those is we effectively have a hotline. A hotline. One that Jay admits, in the very same interview, still sends the reports right back to them. So let's get this straight. By October 2024, the Grace investigation was well underway. Survivors in Duluth had come forward. Anaheim had left the movement. Trusted HR was reviewing multiple allegations of abuse in Northern Ireland. And yet, Jay claims, quote, no one has made complaints. If that sounds like a man trying to get ahead of the press rather than ahead of the problem, you're not wrong. Because if you're launching a podcast series on abuse and narcissism in church leadership, at the exact same time you've hired a firm known for investigating those things, but you never mention Duluth, never mention Anaheim, never acknowledge a single victim, that's not transparency. That's a PR campaign. So what did the reports actually find? After months of interviews, document reviews, and survivor testimonies, each investigative firm, Grace, Trusted HR, and Guidepost Solutions, identified deeply rooted problems. And while each report focused on a different branch of the movement, the conclusions were remarkably similar. Let's start with Duluth Vineyard. Grace was brought in by Duluth's elders in 2022 to investigate allegations of abuse and mishandled conduct. Here's what they found. A former student submitted a 56-page letter in 2019 detailing spiritual abuse and sexual harassment by Jackson Gatlin, as well as spiritual abuse by Brenda Gatlin. That letter was forwarded to Michael Gatlin, but never shared with the church council. Grace stated that neither Michael, Brenda, nor Jackson cooperated with the investigation. Instead, Brenda accused the process of being, quote, completely lacking in due process in a resignation letter. There was no internal investigation, and the church's leadership at the time failed to act on multiple serious allegations. Grace concluded, quote, leadership within the Duluth Vineyard created an environment where abuse could occur and continue unchecked. Grace's recommendations were clear: public confession, restorative justice, trauma training, and a zero-tolerance stance toward retaliation. Over in Coleraine, Northern Ireland, Trusted HR investigated years of leadership under Alan and Catherine Scott. Their findings? 60% of participants reported experiencing spiritual abuse under Scott's leadership. 41% identified narcissistic behavior, including Alan allegedly clapping for himself during sermons when the congregation didn't applaud. Multiple staff and volunteers described a pattern of emotional manipulation, public shaming, and a culture where loyalty was demanded and dissent punished. The executive summary called the church culture toxic and controlling. Trusted HR recommended comprehensive governance review, increased transparency, and reflection on how former leaders' patterns may still be shaping church culture. Guidepost wasn't brought in to investigate a specific person or event. Their job was to assess Vineyard USA as a whole. Their findings? A lack of clear authority and oversight at every level. No formal abuse prevention systems. No standardized ordination or leadership training processes. And a reliance on informal relational structures over professional accountability. Guidepost concluded, quote, the current structures do not provide Vineyard USA the tools necessary to prevent or respond to abuse, misconduct, or organizational failure. They recommended hiring trained HR professionals, rewriting governance structures, developing reporting systems, and prioritizing abuse prevention training. Despite being conducted by different firms, each report identified the same patterns: spiritual abuse and coercive leadership, obsession with metrics and performance, lack of clear policies, standards, and oversight, and the absence of safe, confidential reporting systems. So how did the churches and national leadership respond? In the next section, we'll break down what Duluth Vineyard, Causeway Coast Vineyard, Vineyard USA, and Vineyard UK and Ireland actually did with those findings and where things stand now. When the reports came in, pages and pages of findings, analysis, and recommendations, you'd hope for a meaningful response. Some churches took steps towards reform. Others took steps to protect their reputation. Let's start with Duluth Vineyard. Grace offered a comprehensive set of trauma-informed recommendations for Duluth Vineyard, including collaborating with victims before releasing the report, publicly confessing wrongdoing, offering counseling and financial amends, hosting services of lament, creating a trauma-informed culture, and implementing reporting and safeguarding protocols. So what did Duluth actually do? Duluth publicly released the full Grace report online. They issued multiple written apologies, including a statement on October 3, 2023, directly acknowledging failure to protect the vulnerable. They paid for victim therapy, published a list of recommended therapists and victim advocates, and offered help with counseling costs. They hosted and promoted a season of lament, including trauma awareness events and internal policy reviews. While the process hasn't been perfect and has been understandably painful for the church and its community, Duluth Vineyard has shown a level of transparency and accountability that few others have matched. Trusted HR's recommendations for Causeway Coast Vineyard included public acknowledgement of harm, offering trauma support to those impacted, ongoing engagement with an independent assessor, and acknowledging cultural patterns that enabled spiritual abuse. The church initially issued a brief apology during a Sunday service in July of 2023 and committed to counseling support. An independent counselor was appointed to help triage long-term care needs for impacted individuals. However, the full Trusted HR report has never been publicly released. There has been no published follow-up confirming what structural changes were actually implemented. And Alan and Catherine Scott, who left for Anaheim years ago, have not made any public statements in response. For many survivors, the silence has been louder than the apology. Guidepost's job was to evaluate Vineyard USA's organizational health, not individual misconduct. Their recommendations were big picture. Hire HR professionals. Create enforceable reporting policies. Clarify governance roles. Improve transparency. Provide abuse prevention training. To Vineyard USA's credit, they did release the full Guidepost Solutions report in early 2024, minus some redacted internal case studies, which were kept confidential due to privacy concerns. But the implementation? No anonymous third-party hotline has been publicly announced. No formal non-retaliation policy exists in their current documentation. The conflict of interest in dating policies are vague and non-binding. Pastors were asked to sign off on an unfinished employee handbook and bylaw updates, many of which reference policies that haven't even been written yet.
From my vantage point, it feels like very little has changed. I know that I don't think that that's what Vineyard USA would say. I think Vineyard USA would say that they've pretty well gone right down the checklist and they've They've got everything sorted out. But we still have no way to, we don't vote for the national director, really. We can't replace the national director. What we have is a reporting process now. So if you've got an incident of spiritual abuse or sexual abuse, you can call the hotline that's been set up with Guidepost. The problem is then Guidepost just turns around then and passes the thing on to Vineyard USA. And then sometimes that gets passed on to directly to the pastor who has been called on, has been called about. And so it's not a super safe or healthy reporting process. And it doesn't go to anybody who has the power outside of the Vineyard system to actually hold Vineyard USA or that system accountable. So there's no, it feels like, you know, what's the thing, like the catch and kill kind of a thing, you know, like, okay, we've, you know, you call in this number, now we've recorded your thing, and now, you know, just leave it with us, we'll take it from here. And I don't think that is, from a victim-centered perspective, I don't think that that's been helpful, even though it creates the appearance like something's happened. And when I've asked about some of these things and some, you know, like what's being in place for victims, the conversation almost always turns to how much money has been spent on these systems, how much money has been spent in putting these other things in place. Now, I will say that it's not that there aren't any changes. I wouldn't say that it's not that there aren't actually helpful resources that have been paid for by our 3% giving as local churches that Vineyard USA has contracted with on our behalf. But in terms of structural, substantive changes where a person could actually go to like an ombudsperson, leave a complaint that could then be independently investigated, changes that feel like there's power that's actually being given to local church pastors, those things haven't happened, and it doesn't feel like there's been a substantive change in any respect.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Across three investigations, survivors and church communities were told, "We'll hear you. We'll change." But too often, the response hasn't been transformation. It's been containment. Next, we'll turn our attention to the documents Vineyard pastors have been asked to sign, and examine what they say, what they leave out, and what signing them actually means. After the reports, after the apologies, after the statements of future reform, Vineyard USA began releasing documents. A new employee handbook, a revised set of bylaws, a conflict of interest policy, a dating and nepotism policy, and a child protection policy. Pastors were asked to sign off on these materials by May 1st, 2025. Many under pressure and many without clarity. So let's take a look at what's actually in them. Let's start with the National Leadership Handbook, version 2.0, adopted in March of 2024. This document places heavy emphasis on ordination, what qualifies a pastor to serve, and how pastors are credentialed by Vineyard USA. The issue? Most of the criteria are incredibly vague. For example, to be ordained, a pastor must demonstrate, quote, an acceptable level of biblical theological training for ministry, and a, quote, lifestyle consistent with biblical standards as Christian conduct. But what does that mean? What qualifies as acceptable? Who determines if someone's life meets a biblical standard? There's no formal structure, no seminary path, no certification, and no theological baseline. It's subjective, and that subjectivity has allowed serious issues to go unchecked for years. The 2022 bylaws introduced major structural changes for Vineyard USA, eliminating formal membership, consolidating power in a board of trustees, and placing significant influence in the hands of the national director and executive committee. There's no election process for trustees, no vote for pastors, and no recall process. And that's not just bad optics, it's a fundamental shift in how power flows. But the bylaws are just one part of what Vineyard pastors are now being asked to accept. Alongside them are several new or updated policies, each tied to Vineyard USA's post-investigation commitments. Let's examine those one by one. First, the conflict of interest policy. On the surface, this policy reads like a fairly standard nonprofit financial ethics document. It's designed to ensure that board members and officers disclose any financial interest they may have in business transactions involving the church. That's important, but also incomplete. Here's what's missing. There's no guidance on relational conflicts, the kind that arise when family members or spouses share power. There's no reference to spiritual conflicts of interest, such as situations where leaders are accused of misconduct but remain in decision-making roles. And there's no extension of these provisions to the broader national leadership team, just the board of directors and occasionally elders. In other words, this policy might prevent a board member from awarding a contract to their brother-in-law, but it won't stop a national director from placing their spouse in a top leadership role. It also won't prevent a former supervisor from overseeing the investigation into someone they mentored or raised. And that's precisely what happened in Duluth. The nepotism and dating policy revised in 2024 offers some language around supervision. Relatives and dating partners can be employed if they don't supervise one another. If supervision becomes unavoidable, one of them may need to resign if no reassignment is possible. But here's the problem. There are loopholes that weaken the policy's enforceability. Relatives and romantic partners can serve together in leadership if reassignment is not available. There's no language about leadership optics or institutional integrity. There's no enforcement mechanism, just suggested procedures. This is especially striking because the current national director and his spouse both serve on the national leadership team. If the policy doesn't apply at the top, how can it be enforced below? Now, in fairness, this is where Vineyard USA gets it right. The child and youth safety policy includes criminal background checks, mandatory reporting language, clear screening protocols, two adult rules, restrictions on unsupervised mentoring and inappropriate physical contact. It also provides structured onboarding, regular training, and defines abuse categories clearly, including guidelines for touch and communication. It's comprehensive, it's readable, and it reflects a genuine effort to prevent future harm. From a legal perspective, here's what you need to know. The conflict of interest policy is limited in scope, narrowly focused on finances, and does not address the relational or structural conflicts that have defined the movement's biggest scandals. The nepotism and dating policy contains subjective exceptions and fails to clearly prohibit the kinds of leadership overlap that enabled abuse in the past. The employee handbook is vague, incomplete in parts, and gives wide discretionary power to the national director over ordination, discipline, and policy interpretation. The bylaws eliminate membership rights, centralize governance, and leave no mechanism for grassroots accountability. The child and youth safety policy is strong, but it's the outlier. If I were a legal advisor to a Vineyard pastor, I would not recommend signing these documents as they currently stand. Not without clarification, not without independent legal counsel, and not without firm commitments that the most glaring gaps, relational conflicts, governance transparency, whistleblower protections, will be addressed in writing. Because signing now means accepting an incomplete structure, vague definitions, and a leadership culture that has not yet proven it can protect the vulnerable. For all the policies, handbooks, and reassurances, some Vineyard churches weren't buying it. As they read the reports and examined the new documents, a growing number of pastors realized these changes weren't accountability, they were damage control. In January of 2025, the Vineyard Church of Ann Arbor sent a letter to Vineyard USA's national director and board of trustees. In it, they made four bold demands. Number one, the resignation of national director Jay Pathak, citing his failure to respond adequately to the abuse scandal in Duluth. Number two, the disbanding of the Board of Trustees and the reconstitution of national leadership with transparency and integrity. Number three, immediate adoption of the recommendations from the Grace and Guidepost reports. And number four, a halt to the ordination and bylaw update processes until national leadership had been restructured and held accountable. They also announced something else. They were withholding their 3% tithe, the licensing fee required by Vineyard's trademark agreement.
Well, it's really fascinating. We have people who, and I totally understand this, but we have pastors who are very happy with really like the most superficial sort of exposure to it, reading just kind of the bare minimum, if even that, you know, kind of the headlines. And then we have, I would say, even some people who are just too busy. Like they just, you know, they're just trying to keep their church open, or they're just trying to put out their own fire. And they don't have time or inclination to get into the weeds on some of these issues around the Duluth Vineyard or the reorg process or how Vineyard USA has responded to Vineyard Duluth Vineyard. And then on the other end, you have pastors who are able, for whatever reason, and interested in doing more reading, more investigation, asking more questions. And then, you know, of course, everywhere in between in that spectrum. And so we have, you know, pastors I've talked to who are like, hey, I'm gonna sign off on the reorg. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. And then just, you know, if something down the road goes off the rails, then we'll just get out of the Vineyard at that time. And I've tried to gently explain that once you change your bylaws and constitution to cede power to Vineyard USA, you don't get to just leave Vineyard USA anymore. It's not just up to your local church. Like, it's not just up to you. That's not how it's going to work anymore. And that just seems to be, and it just seems to be something that people haven't really thought about, or they just don't even think that it's true. And some of it is in part because we have, you know, as a movement, we have been very lax on constitutions and bylaws. A lot of churches that they're just now, because of this, putting together a constitution and bylaws outside of whatever they did for incorporation. And so they may not even understand how legally binding a constitution and bylaws is.
Ann Arbor's letter was clear. Their issue wasn't with the movement's theology. It was with its lack of transparency and failure to protect victims. Duluth Church Council also sent a letter, this one calling out Vineyard USA for re-victimizing survivors. They wrote, Vineyard USA's communications regarding Duluth's leadership have lacked transparency and integrity. This includes retaliation that creates fear in churches who might seek to advocate for survivors or push for accountability. And they followed through, suspending their 3% contribution as well. But what happened next raised serious red flags. Just weeks after Duluth sent that letter, Vineyard USA's managing director, Rob Morgan, brought forward allegations of spiritual and emotional abuse against John Kluwer, Duluth's interim pastor and one of the only national voices consistently advocating for transparency. Duluth acted swiftly. They brought in an outside investigator, and John voluntarily stepped aside to avoid the appearance of interference. What did the investigation find? Nothing. In fact, the independent investigator concluded that no witness that I interviewed reported Kluwer using inappropriate language, threatening physical intimidation, or other behavior that a reasonable person would find objectively offensive. I was unable to find even one witness who alleged conduct which, even if proven true, would have constituted, quote, unilateral, authoritarian, controlling, unreasonable actions. Even more troubling, quote, Mr. Morgan's refusal to cooperate was surprising and disappointing, given that he himself communicated those allegations to the council. Let that sink in. The managing director of Vineyard USA made allegations, refused to participate in the investigation, and it happened just after Duluth's public letter of dissent. This isn't Rob Morgan's first controversy. He's the same national leader who, when the initial allegations about Jackson Gatlin emerged, twice recommended that Jackson's father, Michael Gatlin, stay in leadership and help oversee the church's response. Now he's making allegations against the one pastor pushing for structural change. If accountability is the goal, why hasn't Rob been held accountable? Let's be honest. It's becoming hard not to see a pattern. A church pushes back, its pastor is accused. A leader demands reform, the national office refuses to engage. Churches withhold funding, Vineyard USA disassociates them. Ann Arbor was recently formally removed from the movement. Their crime? Calling for transparency, accountability, and justice. Next up, we'll explore what happens when Vineyard pastors begin asking bigger questions about theology, inclusion, and whether this movement still has space for dissent. We began this chapter by asking, what does accountability really look like? Three investigations, three sets of recommendations, and a flurry of new policies, handbooks, and leadership structures. But when churches asked real questions about power, transparency, and harm, they weren't met with answers. They were met with silence, and in some cases, retaliation. Ann Arbor, disassociated. Duluth, accused. Raleigh, ignored. And what about Vineyard USA's own leaders, like Rob Morgan, who inserted themselves into multiple crises, made allegations without cooperating, and remain in national leadership today? Still there, still silent, still in power. As we close this chapter, it's worth asking again, who is the Vineyard movement actually protecting? Because if the people most willing to tell the truth are the ones being pushed out, then the real problem isn't just what happened. It's who's still allowed to lead. Before we wrap this chapter, there's one more thread I want to pull. As I dug deeper into the structure of the Vineyard movement, I started to notice how often we were coming back to one thing, power. Who has it, how they use it, and what they're willing to protect in order to keep it. And sometimes, when you're following power, you end up following the money. I remember something we touched on briefly earlier in the series, the Vineyard's publishing arm, the one responsible for all that worship music that helped fund the movement's growth, the songs that made their way into churches around the world. So I decided to look into their financial records. And thanks to ProPublica's Nonprofit Explorer, I found Vineyard Music USA's most recent tax filings. What I saw raised some serious questions. Let me break it down. Vineyard Music USA reported over $1 million in revenue last year. But here's the thing. They spent even more. They operated at a loss of over $230,000. That means they're not bringing in enough to cover their costs. And those costs are interesting. Royalties made up over 60% of their total expenses, more than $780,000. But the report doesn't say who the royalties are going to. There's no list, no names, no transparency. Just a massive payout, untraceable, in the document. That's a big red flag, especially in a nonprofit that's supposed to be accountable to the public. Then there's executive compensation. According to the form, the organization has zero employees. None. But at the same time, more than $415,000 in compensation was reported for leaders like Jay Pathak, LG Justice Jr., and Joyce O'Connor. How? Because that money didn't come from Vineyard Music. It came from a related organization, most likely Vineyard USA. This kind of structure isn't illegal, but it does obscure where the money is really going. It allows Vineyard Music to operate with the appearance of minimal overhead, while executives are paid elsewhere, making it harder to track true leadership costs. There's also a $300,000 drop in outstanding loans, from $450,000 to $150,000, with no explanation. We don't know who the loan was to, whether it was repaid, written off, or forgiven. It's a $300,000 question mark. So why does this matter? Because this is the financial structure that undergirded the movement. The money from worship albums, the royalties, the licensing fees, they helped fund the broader Vineyard empire. And like the leadership structures we've been examining, the financial ones lack transparency, accountability, and basic clarity. These are not just bookkeeping details, these are power dynamics. And when the people at the top control both the message and the money without real oversight, abuse and secrecy often follow. Next time on Spoiled Fruit, we take a different kind of turn. We'll hear from former Vineyard pastors who believe the movement had room for everyone, until they spoke up about LGBTQ inclusion, and found out just how small that tent really was. But for now, remember this. Faith movements that are allergic to transparency rarely bear good fruit. Whether it's leadership decisions or royalty payouts, what's hidden often tells the real story. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the official position of any organization, past or present. All statements are based on firsthand interviews, public documents, and good faith efforts to verify accuracy at the time of recording. Nothing in this podcast should be interpreted as legal, medical, or professional advice. If you've experienced abuse or misconduct in a faith-based context, we encourage you to seek help from qualified professionals. A special thanks to Brian Metzger and the leadership of Raleigh Vineyard for their courage, transparency, and ongoing pursuit of truth. This episode of Spoiled Fruit, Faith and Power was written and hosted by me, John Williamson, and produced by John Williamson Productions, LLC. Thanks for listening.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.